Roger Goodell, the commissioner, at the podium.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have traded the 7th pick to the Buffalo Bills. With the 7th pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Buffalo Bills select Josh Allen, quarterback, Wyoming.
Tre'Davious White, defensive back, LSU.
Jermaine Edmonds, linebacker, Virginia Tech.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I am your host of Locked On Bills. Good to be with you on this Friday. I have another guest lined up for you guys, and after Water Cooler Wednesday on Rico from Buffalo Fanatics, I definitely wanted to keep the momentum going. You guys have us in the top 125 on the iTunes charts, and before I even knew that was going to happen, I had a great guest lined up, and I was going to air this show on Monday, but we're going to do it on Friday, let you guys listen to it over the weekend, since you know, so many new subscribers and listeners, and definitely wanted to reward you guys for that. So I've got Jordan Reed with me here on the podcast today. Jordan covers the NFL draft for Cover One, a resource that I know most Bills fans are very familiar with, and he also hosts his own podcast, the Draft Board Podcast with Blue Wire Podcast, a great podcast that you can listen to. Jordan, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Joe. Excited to be here.
Yeah, man, I'm a big fan of your work. You know, I've been we followed each other for a few years and got a chance to meet you at the Senior Bowl. But I saw you tweeting some Josh Allen clips, and that piqued my interest, and so wanted to reach out to you, obviously, and say, hey, what are you doing, man? You're watching some Josh Allen, and get you on the podcast here to talk about it, because Bills Mafia cannot get enough takes on Josh Allen.
Yeah, and I was really surprised to see how much success he did have, especially down the backstretch of the year, and you just saw the huge difference in the beginning of the year before he suffered the injury, and then post-injury when he did come back. And something that you did notice is that he was much more relaxed when he did come back from the injury. So I hate seeing guys get hurt, but the injury was a blessing in disguise for him, and he just had a better understanding of protections and the entire picture in front of him as a whole, and that's something that you really notice. And I thought Brian Daboll did an outstanding job of really incorporating what he did best as far as allowing him to be a runner and not really using that against him. And yes, he does use his legs as a crutch at times, but Josh Allen is that dual threat type of quarterback, and that's exactly what Brian Daboll did embrace, and that's something that you noticed down the backstretch of the season last year.
You know what's interesting about that comment that you made was Sean McDermott was asked at the NFL scouting combine during his press conference about if he was concerned about the amount of times Josh Allen ran the football and the wear and tear on his body. And obviously McDermott's familiar with Cam from his time in Carolina. And Sean McDermott's answer was not like I would expect it to be. He said, we want to have an environment where players come and be who they are. And I thought that was really interesting when you would hear, I don't know, every other head coach in the world say, oh, Josh has got to be careful and pick his spots and not take hits. Sean McDermott literally embraced that component of his game and realized that that's a big reason why Josh is difficult to defend. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and I think it's spot on, because with Josh Allen, he's not a guy that's going to sit back there and throw the ball 35 to 40 plus times a game. You have to find a way to incorporate some quarterback runs into the game with him, because that's how he gets comfortable, because he's so used to using his legs, whether that's scrambling outside of the pocket and rolling to his right and throwing the ball down the field, or in being incorporated in some power type running schemes where he can run downhill. And that's something, again, credit to Brian Daboll. He did embrace that and mix in those type of runs with Josh Allen, as opposed to earlier in the year where he was just allowing him to sit in the pocket and throw the ball 30 plus times a game. That's just not who he is. And he has what I like to call a Cam Newton effect, in that he's never going to be a guy that is a consistent 60% completion percentage type of guy. Just because, I mean, let's just be honest, he's not a guy that's known for his pinpoint type of accuracy. But if he can relax in some spots where he can throw it in some tight windows, just because he has that overcompensation of arm strength to where he can fit it in those tight windows. But just asking him to sit back in the pocket and wing it 40 plus times a game, that's just not him. So you have to find a way to get him involved with the running game. So I think McDermott's comments were spot on.
You know, Jordan, it seemed like last year in the draft process, Josh Allen very much became a punchline, you know, just talking about that he's
big and tall and athletic, and he can throw the ball a million miles down the field. But, you know, one thing that's continues to be kind of thrown in the face, even for people that are still doubting Josh, and that's fair if you're still doubting Josh. I don't hate that, but it seems like the one thing that people want to always go to is that completion percentage. And it's one of those things where it's definitely a useful statistic, and you want to complete a high percentage of your passes. But I feel like Josh is a bit of a unique circumstance in that the way he plays is never going to lend itself to having, you know, 60, 65, or even a close to a 70% completion percentage. Is that something that we need to embrace that's unique with Josh Allen? Or do you think it really matters that he gets that completion percentage up?
It doesn't really matter. And you just have to accept that's just who he's going to be, just because that's his playing style. He's a reckless type of quarterback, and that's not a bad thing at all. That's just how he gravitates or revolves his game around. He just has a reckless style to where he just likes to run around and kind of play like Sandlot type of football and just exuberate that type of arm strength that he does have. And like I alluded to earlier, he's not going to sit back in the pocket and just wing it. That's just not his playing style. So with Josh Allen, I think he had to do what he had to do last year because the Bills' run game last year was just bad. So, I mean, he was the second leading rusher among rookies right behind Lamar Jackson just because they didn't have any type of running game or any type of threat in the backfield once Shady McCoy did suffer some injuries throughout the year. So in order to combat that or complement that, he had to run around and be involved in the running game as a runner. Now, with that running game maybe back intact now with Frank Gore in the fold and then having some more additions on the perimeter, now maybe he can get those rushing yards back down.
My guest today is Jordan Reed from Cover One. He covers the NFL draft. He's also the host of the NFL draft, or excuse me, just the Draft Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at JReedNFL. Before we talk more about the future with Josh Allen, I want to go back a little bit here and get your opinion about him entering the draft process. What did you think of him as a prospect?
Well, I'm sure we pretty much agreed on this, and it's that he was a massive project. And I mean, he checks a lot of boxes as far as the prototypical size, arm strength, but the accuracy was always the biggest question with him. And you were just unsure on if he was ever going to be able to improve upon that. And I thought he did show some really good accuracy in some spots. And that's why I wanted to put up that cut up, because he had some really good throws last year. And I mean, against Jacksonville, just that ball he threw to Robert Foster was just gorgeous. That 75-yard touchdown, that was by far one of the best throws I've seen of any quarterback last year. And you just noticed on that cut-up how much he was just taking a beating last year. So I was just really happy to see Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott really attack this offensive line. And I think they've done exactly what the Chicago Bears did last year in surrounding Mitch Trubisky with weapons. And they've taken the same exact approach and stolen that blueprint away from the Bears by surrounding their franchise quarterback with proper assets. And they've built up that offensive line really nicely so far.
Jordan, I love that you brought up the Bears because I think there's a lot of similarities. Now, hopefully the Bills can go win 12 games next season and really replicate what the Bears were able to do. But, you know, even think about Mitch in his rookie season and the amount of criticism that Chicago took for not adequately building around their young franchise quarterback that they moved up for in the draft and took very high. And he had an abysmal offensive line and bad weapons. And then in one offseason, you know, Allen Robinson and Trey Burton and James Daniels and Anthony Miller. Later, he's got a good infrastructure. The team goes out and wins 12 games. And obviously being the guy from day one really mattered. And hopefully we can see the same growth from Josh Allen. Now, with that in mind, Jordan, what do you think his ceiling is? I know that it may be early to really talk about this, but you've obviously were very connected with him throughout the draft process, scouting him. You've dug into his tape as a rookie. You saw the lumps as well as some of the gains there towards the end. If he continues his trajectory, where do you think he can be? What's his ceiling as an NFL starter?
I think he can be a top 15 to top 20 type of quarterback, and maybe even better than that. Honestly, it's just, can he continue to stay on that steady incline, I should say, and ascend throughout his career? That's going to be the biggest thing for him. And I don't think it's anybody on the field that's going to be key to Josh Allen's development. I think if he's able to stay paired with Brian Daboll, I think he can end up being a top 15 type of quarterback. And why do I say that? Is he's kind of like a wild and reckless type of player, but he has to have that guy in his ear or in his back pocket that can tone that down, just because, I mean, he's an ultimate competitor. You see it every time after he has a big play or when he scores. I mean, he spikes the ball. He's ready to celebrate with his teammates. So he's that fiery type of guy. And sometimes that competitive fire gets the best of him, and he just wants to feel like he wants to play some hero ball. That's what I like to call it, when he really doesn't have to do that. And he just has to have that guy in his ear in that headset to be able to tone it down a bit, just to tell him that. And as long as he has that person beside him, I think he's going to be just fine. And that's why I like the Brian Daboll and Josh Allen pairing so much.
I like the Brian Daboll and Josh Allen pairing a lot too. And you've mentioned Daboll a few times already here in our discussion. It's interesting because one of the questions that Rico Bellany from Buffalo Fanatics gave me on Wednesday, kind of caught me by surprise. And I want to kind of throw this at you. He went back to the 49ers and he said, look, you know, Kyle Shanahan, he loses his starting quarterback, loses his backup quarterback. They've got, who is that guy? They had Nick Mullen starting games. Tons of injuries across their weaponry, and he still found a way to be productive with that offense. Is it fair to say Brian Daboll should have been able to do the same thing last year with the Bills, or is there some context that we need to consider when we make that type of those parallels?
Yeah, I think there's some context you have to have, just because the Bills didn't have anybody on the perimeter. I mean, Zay Jones was injured from time to time, and outside of that, they really didn't have anybody outside of Robert Foster, who showed some really good signs down the backstretch of last year. But they didn't have any running game. Their offensive line was a mess. It was in flux, and they shuffled a lot up front. And they have some good pieces. I like Wyatt Teller. I think he's a very promising piece. Now, he didn't really live up to expectations like a lot of people really tried to crown him with last year, even though he was a fifth-round selection. I liked him a lot pre-draft, and I thought he was going to be a steal at that fifth-round spot, but they've upgraded since that point. But they just didn't have a lot of weapons, not only on the perimeter, but up front. So I think it's a bit unfair, and you have to use some context when making that assumption.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. Now, when I was thinking about the questions I wanted to ask you, this is the one that I got most excited about, because you played quarterback in college. And so from that perspective of having played the position and knowing what it means to have the infrastructure around you, I want to ask you this. You know, the Bills brought in John Brown. They brought in Cole Beasley. They have Zay Jones. They have Robert Foster. What are your thoughts on the types of receivers Buffalo has added, and how important do you think it is for them to add a true number one receiver, potentially a size guy?
Well, first thing I do want to say is, and I want to make this very clear, I think size at receiver is really overrated. And I think you would rather have guys that can naturally separate, especially with a quarterback like Josh Allen, that really doesn't have a lot of margin for error, just because he's not a really accurate type of quarterback. So you want to have guys that can separate and create that breathing room, just because so he can have a larger surface for that airspace that he does need, just because sometimes he's going to make life hard on his receivers, just because he's not known to be the prototypical type of accurate quarterback from time to time. So he's going to need guys that can naturally separate. And if you think about some top guys around the league, from Antonio Brown to even Odell Beckham, they aren't the biggest guys, but what they're known for is that they're able to separate. And then you have your bigger guys around the league, like a Julio Jones or even a DeAndre Hopkins, that are just specimens on the perimeter, that are your bigger types of wide receivers. So number one, wide receivers really come in all different shapes and sizes. And I just think the Bills need to get guys that can separate. And I think they have some guys in Robert Foster and John Brown who can be that vertical threat. Zay Jones, I think, is going to be okay. I think he's more of a number two type of wide receiver. And I think that's really what they have on the roster right now. They have a bunch of 1B type of receivers or complementary guys. And I think they need to go get that lead dog. Now, is that guy in this draft? I still think it's a wait and see type of deal. But I mean, DK Metcalf, do you want to take him at 9? I think that might be a bit too rich for him. But we'll see what the Bills do ultimately decide to do.
So is 4 1Bs. Yeah. Is that equal 1-1? I mean, you know, it's kind of an interesting proposition, because on one hand, you feel like you've got four guys here that can get open and make plays. But on the other hand, you kind of think, well, is there a possession guy that could add to this mix and really, you know, complement what's already in place right here? And maybe that comes in the form of a dynamic tight end. So I think the Bills have positioned themselves well to attack that, however the draft potentially falls to them, whether that's at number 9, 40, or 73.
Yeah, and they're going to have their pick of the litter in this draft. And, I mean, one guy I really do like for them, obviously not in the first round, but maybe somewhere on day two, and that's J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who had his pro day on Thursday at Stanford. And I think he stamped his status as a day two pick, running a 4.49. So that's really good for him. And he's a guy that's – I think there's a bit of a false perception out there about him and that he's just a guy that really likes to box out and take advantage of guys in the red zone. But – he doesn't have a well-diversed route tree, but the route tree that he was allowed to run, he showed to be able to create some separation. So I think he really could be a good fit for them in the second round. So, and there's plenty of other guys in this draft class, too, that they could look on day two, and maybe like a Deebo Samuel or even a Miles Boykin from Notre Dame. I think those are some other guys that are natural separators that could be an asset to the Bills roster.
It's funny you mentioned J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. I like him a lot, and it's almost like we're victimizing him because of how he was used. A lot of those contested situations that he was in, they were always going to be contested situations because they're in the red zone in a condensed area of the field where it's literally a jump ball. Like, you cannot fault him for not creating separation in a situation where it's not designed for there to be separation. His separation was vertical, right? I mean, so there was a lot of nuance. If you look at some of his stuff, not in condensed areas of the field, I really like his releases and how he attacks leverage and did get open. So he's kind of unique, and you can't say he can't separate just because he's used in the red zone. All right. So one thing I wanted to ask you here is getting kind of more specific on the draft. And, you know, the Bills brought in six unrestricted free agents at offensive line. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
All these weapons that we talked about here and adding Cole Beasley and John Brown to Robert Foster and Zay Jones. They brought in Tyler Kroft and Jake Fisher, believe it or not, to play tight end. So they've made so many huge investments on this offensive side of the football. When you think about the Bills, I know you make mock drafts, you cover the draft, and you think about how the landscape is going to fall in front of them, what do you think the priority at number nine for the Bills should be?
Yeah, well, the good thing that I love that the Bills have done so far, and even in free agency, is that they've kind of relaxed some of the needs that they did have, and everyone knew coming to the offseason that offensive line probably was the biggest need, and like you alluded to, they bought in a bunch of pieces to fulfill some of those needs, and Mitch Moore, Spencer Long, and even Ty Nsekhe, and even Quentin Spain, who they just signed a couple of days ago. So they're attacking the trenches really forcefully, and I really like that they have done that, and they've positioned themselves to take the best player available at nine or even a trade back situation where they can collect even more picks than what they already do have. I believe they already have 10 picks already in hand. So maybe they could trade back and maybe even a trade back up from the second round so they can find a way to get two first round selections to add even more depth to this roster. And a guy who I would absolutely love and I think Bills fans should definitely love is Ed Oliver. I think he would be a fantastic fit, and you pair him alongside Harrison Phillips, the third round pick from a year ago. And I know the Starletuile experiment hasn't really worked out to this point, and they can't really get rid of him just because of the contract they do have on hand with him right now. But I don't think any guy they have on the interior really has the upside that an Ed Oliver does. And you've seen the clips on Twitter, I'm sure. Sean McDermott has been very hands-on with Ed Oliver throughout this process. And even at his pro day, he even worked him out personally. So I definitely think there's some interest there. And if he's there at nine, I think they should sprint to the podium with the card with his name on it.
I'm with you. I think that's kind of my dream scenario right now at number nine, getting a penetration style player. You know, what was so important to McDermott's defense is with Carolina was Kawan Short, really an underrated piece of that defense, having that wrecking ball. And they don't have that right now. And really, even with, and I've said this, and I know it's not popular, Kyle Williams really wasn't that player for the last two seasons. His impact to this team was more his leadership and his presence. He wasn't the high impact player he was four or five plus years ago. And so we've never seen Sean McDermott's defense in Buffalo with the true wrecking ball interior penetrator. I'm here for it. I want to see that. I want to see that added to the mix and what's a really solid back seven and as well as what's playing next to him and Jerry Hughes, who's been a really good pass rusher who there's no complimentary rush ever. So Jerry Hughes is the only guy getting pressure. That quarterback has everywhere to go. And so, I think if you get some of that pressure in his face, that's going to, you know, help maximize what you have in Jerry Hughes as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they need to build up this defensive line. And the best thing about the Bills' needs is that wherever they are weakest right now, position-wise, this draft is very strong. And we talk about defensive line, that's really the headliner position in this class. And once again, if they want to take a guy at nine, they're going to have their choice. And whether that's a guy like Amontez Sweat, who I think definitely could be a good fit, Josh Allen might slip we really don't know what will happen to him at this point. It doesn't look likely, but they're going to have their pick of plenty of guys, whether that's on day one or even day two. If they want to select some guys, they're going to have their pick.
You mentioned Montez Sweat, who I think is absolutely in play for the Bills at number nine. And one thing we've learned about McDermott, Brandon Bean, is they draft guys that are seniors, that participated at the Senior Bowl, and they have prototypical size and athletic ability. I mean, that is Montez Sweat to a T. Obviously, the 30-plus tackles for loss and 20-plus sacks over the last 2 years in the SEC is appealing, but he really kind of fits some of those other, peripheral things that have been typical about Bill's draft picks. Now, I'm not super high on Sweat. I don't necessarily believe he always plays to that athletic ability. Where are you on him? And I mean, do you think that's good value at number nine?
Yeah, and I mean, guys with that type of size, 6'6", 260 pounds, and then everyone likes to label him as a workout warrior. And he doesn't necessarily play 4-4-1 in games, but he has that speed to cover that type of ground coming off the edge. Now, I don't think he's as bendy as some of the other guys like a Brian Burns or even a Nick Bosa or those types of players. I don't think he has the hips of those guys, and he needs to develop a certain type of counter move to counter react some of the punches that he does take once he does get upfield. But he's the perfect type of moldable clay type of player that you really want. And just that size and speed, you can't really coach it. And then getting with a guy like Sean McDermott, who has had proven edge rushers in years past, even in his days back with the Panthers, and has success there. I think getting him in the building to be able to mold Montez Sweat, I think you couldn't ask for a better situation.
You guys are listening to Jordan Reed. He covers the NFL draft for Cover One. He also hosts the Draft Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at JReedNFL. Just a couple more things to get into before we close today. Now, you're an outsider. You're not a Bills guy. And that's what's fun to have you on this podcast. I don't think I've had too many of those yet. And so I wanted to kind of get your outsider's opinion as to the Buffalo Bills and what the direction of this team is and what your realistic expectations for 2019 is for this team.
I love the direction that they're going in, honestly. And I say this every time I talk about the Bills, even over at Cover One, we do discuss the Bills in our little group chat that we do have. And their blueprint is exactly like what the Carolina Panthers had a couple years ago. And they have their Cam Newton and Josh Allen, and they have their Luke Kuechly and Tremaine Edmonds already in place. And now they're just filling out the roster. And that's exactly what the Panthers did, even in their glory days when they went to the Super Bowl a couple years ago. They placed those depth fillers and filled in those roster spots with certain players. And now that's exactly what the Bills are doing. And I'm not saying Tremaine Edmonds and Josh Allen have the upside of those two guys, but they have their building blocks on both sides of the ball. And both of those guys are going to be their franchise centerpiece types of players. And then you have other fillers as well throughout the roster. I like Tre'Davious White. I think he's a really good player. And I really like their entire secondary as a whole with Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. So every level of the defense, you have a notable player. You have Jerry Hughes on the first level. You have Edmonds on the second level. And then on the third level, I mean, pick whoever you want. And then they're bringing in these depth fillers. Teron Johnson, I think he's a promising piece once he comes back from injury. Kevin Johnson, who I think maybe just needed a change of scenery. I really like the depth that they have built there. And Levi Wallace was really sort of a surprise coming in last year as an undrafted free agent. So they have this depth. And now on the offensive side of the ball, they're building up their depth with this offensive line. And Ty Nsekhe is a guy that I absolutely love in Washington. And we'll see. Maybe a tackle still may be in play at nine, and maybe they still want him to be that swing tackle alongside Deion Dawkins like he was in Washington. So they've positioned themselves to take the best player available at that ninth overall selection. And I like where they're going in this division because they're still kind of waiting it out and seeing what the Patriots end. Dynasty trying to end, but I think once that ends in maybe 2 to 3 years from now, I think the Bills are going to be in prime position to take over that division. Now, they do have some competition with the Jets, but I think as of right now, I think just on paper, I think they're a much better team than what the New York Jets are.
They won 6 games last year, Jordan, and the early over-under for wins came out, I think, in the last week. And you know what they put the Bills at?
I did not.
Six wins. Six.
Ooh, I think they'll go over that.
Come on, that's a hard over, right?
Like, yeah, what are we doing? I think they can get to 9. I think 9-7 is very fair.
And I think, I mean, honestly, you want to see what 9-7 looks like, but I think I'd take that right now. That would indicate growth. I'm, you know, across the board. And, you know, 9-7 got the Bills in the playoffs 2 years ago. I don't know if that's good enough in 2019, but I think come on, 6 wins again, exactly what they won last year. You can't tell me this team isn't going to be better in 2019 and beyond. Last thing I want to get into, you're writing a draft guide, and I've written a few of those myself, and I know the work that goes into it. I know the level of analysis that you're going to deliver. Can you tell the listeners about your draft guide, where they can get it, and all the details?
Yeah, so the pre-order purchase link is already up on my Twitter page. That's at @JReedNFL, at @JReedNFL is pinned at the top of my page, and it is $10. But the proceeds from this project is all going to a foundation called the Raleigh Rise for Hunger Foundation. It's a foundation that I have been donating to for 3 years now. I actually did it with my draft guide last year, so it's a foundation that I have partnered with, and they fight hunger not only over here in the United States, but they also do it internationally as well. They have offices in Malaysia, the Philippines, and also South Africa. So you're also donating to a good cause, but also while you're watching the draft, you can have it in your lap and you can just scroll and see and read about the prospect that the Bills did draft.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen the sample on your Twitter page here. It's all of the biographical information, all of the stats that you're looking for. Really cool, like, you know, obviously scouting notes, which is the meat and potatoes of a draft guy, but also a lot of work on the background side of things where you're really delivering information about these guys and their stories and all those key things that make a person, you know, more than just a football player. So I love that component of it. And I mean, how cool is that, you know, you're giving all of the proceeds to charity, and that's very noble, and you know, kudos to you on that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Joe.
And I appreciate you coming on this podcast, Jordan. You delivered some great information, and really excited about you and your draft guide. And obviously everyone needs to check out the Draft Board podcast. Check out Jordan's work on Cover One, hit him up on Twitter at @JReedNFL. And thank you again for coming on the show, and thank you for listening to the show. And we'll be back again for you on Monday. Make sure to take a moment here and subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, and enjoy your weekend. And I'll catch up with you guys again on Monday.